WMFO Medford, 91.5 FM. It is The Big Picture. Derek Gary and Lisa Nichols with you until 9 o'clock tonight. 855-915-9636 is the telephone number. 855-915-9636. Coming up in just a little bit, we'll get you caught up on the latest, what we know about the terrorist attack at Westminster in London today. And coming up later tonight, we're going to take a look at the MBTA and why it can't make a living, why it can't make money, why it can't seem to do anything. Happy spring, Lisa Nichols. It's spring.
Is it, though?
Spring.
Yeah, I just defrosted myself.
Yeah. But it's spring. Wear your parka.
Sure feels like spring.
It does not feel like spring at all out there. we got a lot to get to tonight, so we're going to keep the chit-chat at the top of the show to a minimum and just get down to business. Lisa Nichols, what do we got going on locally?
Well, today in local news, we learned some Massachusetts cities and towns are under the eye of ICE. Somerville, along with four other cities and towns in Massachusetts, were listed by U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement as a jurisdiction that limits cooperation with federal law enforcement authorities to detain undocumented immigrants as part of an ICE report released on Monday. The designation is part of ICE's first weekly decline detainer outcome report, which federal authorities compiled as a result of an executive order signed by President Donald Trump on January 25th. Boston and Cambridge were also listed as non-cooperating cities. The city of Somerville has been designated a sanctuary city for 30 years, meaning it does not profile residents to check immigration status and turn undocumented residents over to ICE for potential deportation if they are suspected of civil offenses. Trump's January 25th executive order called for the federal government to revoke funding for sanctuary cities. Somerville Mayor Joe Curtatone has promised that the city will not back down from its sanctuary designation if federal funding is taken away, and will deal with fiscal consequences, according to a February 8 news article. Curtatone estimates that the city receives more than $12 million every year from the federal government, though it is unclear how much funding could be revoked. Quote, if we lose funding, we will tighten our belts, but we will not sell our community's values short.
That one's not an if, Mayor Curtatone. Yeah. You are going to lose funding.
That is going to happen.
To lose funding.
And he continues, just the same as our mayor, Mayor Marty Walsh, and
Mayor Marty,
mayor in Chelsea and in Cambridge, who have been quite vocal about, you had
let
Marty
the illegals
Walsh,
run free,
you know, saying that he was going to open up City Hall to all the illegals.
Yeah.
Because God forbid we get rid of anybody, which is against the law.
Right.
To go against federal. But
don't you
again,
understand, Lisa? Illegals built this great country of ours. Our nation was built by illegal immigrants.
Yeah. Well, that's what Curtatone says. He wants to make sure that people do know, since Somerville has become a sanctuary city in 1987, that in fact unemployment has gone down and crime has gone down.
Compared to 1987, unemployment and crime has gone down everywhere.
Yeah.
Across the country.
That is true.
Everywhere. 1987 was one of the worst years for crime statistics in the 1980s, mm-hmm. because there was a little thing called the crack epidemic happening.
Oh, yeah.
Not to mention very high unemployment. Mm-hmm. There were a lot of problems. It was the stock market crash, too. A lot of bad things happened in 1987.
But once again, we have this discussion where I'm sick and tired of it. And it's infuriating.
Yeah.
There are very basic fundamentals to how a city needs to go along with federal requirements. And when you have the president, regardless of your opinion of him or not, this is something that is in law. This is federal law, which means you cannot go against it. So to throw your hands up and cry like a baby and say that you are looking out for the protection of the people that are in your community, I understand that. But what you are failing to recognize that they are here illegally. Where is that verbiage being lost?
This is when I would like to see the Immigration and Customs Enforcement arrest some mayors and arrest some police captains. Not because I have anything. I get where the police are coming from, because the police are really kind of caught over barrel in this situation. Because if you have a crime that involves someone in the immigrant community, they won't talk to the police, which is why police get on board with this. The reality is we have an administration that has made enforcing our immigration laws a priority. And if you, as a, you know, I'll cut the cops a break on this all day long, but if you're a mayor, if you're a city councilor, if you are a state senator or a state representative, and you are advocating that the law be broken, go to jail. Okay? Your job is to uphold the law. That's part of your job, not to pick and choose which laws you want to uphold.
No, I like this one, and I don't like this one.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying that it would be any different if it was maybe a smaller community and you had some crazy rogue mayor of a small town. I mean, even Northampton out in Western Mass is on this list.
Yeah.
Not that it would make any difference, but we're talking about
Northampton. Northampton's worried about having to mow its own lawn. That's their concern in Northampton.
We're talking about some of the largest communities, Boston being one, Somerville being one, and Chelsea being another. These are large communities that are part of the Commonwealth. And when you see these leaders who are in power going against federal regulation and saying, what does that tell the people that live in the community? Oh, it's okay to not follow the law.
Well, this is the problem. And we had a succession of presidents in the United States that were not interested in enforcing immigration law. They didn't care, okay?
No, and absolutely, this is why we've gotten to the point that we have.
They would get the worst of the worst out of the country, and let's remember that deportations were up under Barack Obama. But there was never any sort of a concentrated federal effort to say, we are going to enforce our immigration laws. Now there is. Now you have a new president. And your job as mayor is to uphold the law. That's part of the reason you're the mayor, is because you uphold the law. Whether it's popular or not, whether you like it or not, whether you think it's right or not, if you are going to stand against the president of the United States of America, you are going to lose.
But the president, Washington, they've made it very clear. You are not going to get funding. So what are you trying to tell me? That these cities actually think that they're going to be able to go without, what, the $12 million? And I don't want to hear the crap from them saying, look at what President Trump is doing. He's now taking, because you know they're going to pull out the, now we're losing funding for schools. Now
won't
we're losing.
Someone think of the children. Yeah. The children are
That's
suffering.
That's the first thing.
Yeah. Well, the children are not suffering. The children are suffering because of decisions that are made by these elected leaders. Mm-hmm. Voters don't get this. People don't get this. They hear that funding from Washington has been cut. And then the mayor comes out and says, well, we got to take money away from the schools. And the voters think money for the schools was taken away. No, 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 no. That's not what happened. Your mayor, who is violating the law of the United States of America by refusing to turn over information and individuals to Immigration and Customs Enforcement, has subsequently made the decision that he is going to balance the budget on the backs of the schools.
Mm-hmm. All of this, the people that you put in office.
All of this goes back to Curt Attoni. He is the one responsible for this, not Donald Trump. These are decisions that he is making. Mm-hmm. That will cause these problems in the city of Somerville. And if anybody sits around and says, oh, Donald Trump is cutting money for the schools in Somerville, no, that's a lot of crap.
Yeah.
That cut is being made much closer to home because the federal government does not provide direct funding to your schools.
It provides some for some programs. You're wondering why your streets aren't being plowed. You're wondering why, you know, you can list the things that the city pays for.
Well,
if you're wondering where that money is going, well, here it is. There's $12 million that could possibly be taken away because you as a voter had the confidence to vote these people in with the understanding that they would respect the law.
Well, how about this? Here's a workable solution. They cut $12 million from the Somerville budget, okay? Somerville gets rid of its public works department and replaces it with illegal aliens. Can we do that?
Mm-hmm.
Then
that works.
Then the city of Somerville can have its lawn mowed by illegal aliens the same way that a lot of people out in the suburbs have their lawns mowed by illegal aliens. There we go. Problem solved.
Makes sense.
Of course, it doesn't help for the Americans who get thrown out of work, and I believe those are union jobs, and that probably won't go over well at the local. But there is a solution.
What if you look in Boston? I mean, Mayor Marty Walsh, she lives for the unions.
How
would you think they would feel?
This is what
I actually have to get rid of some of those jobs because the government isn't sending the city of Boston $26 million a year anymore.
This is one of the things that's stunning to me because a lot of the labor unions have come out against illegal immigration. And I don't know what the situation is with the unions in Boston, but the general position of the unions is we don't like it because it depresses wages. It depresses the value of the work that we do, creates a lot of problems for the unions who are desperately struggling to keep membership. So for Walsh, who's supposed to be this big pro-union guy, to turn around and be like, oh, no, we'll let the illegals stay in City Hall. Mm-hmm. I got to imagine there's some union guys sitting around saying, what the heck are you doing, Mayor Marty? Not what we put you in there for. We put you in there to get the Olympics.
It's almost like a struggle between, you know, two of your popular groups.
We put you in there to get the Olympics and the Grand Prix, and you failed on both counts, and we don't know what to do with you anymore. And national news. The first concrete ties between the Trump campaign and Russia emerged today. Associated Press reported that former campaign chair Paul Manafort earned $10 million a year from 2006 to 2009 to promote the interests of Russian billionaire Oleg Deripaska, devising a strategy to gain favorable Western media coverage and to attack anti-Russian attitudes in former Soviet Union countries through media and political action. Deripaska is known to have close ties to Russian President Vladimir Putin and is counted among his top sources for guidance by some U.S. diplomats. Manafort's relationship with Putin ended in 2009 over a $19 million investment in a Ukrainian television station. Manafort was the chairman of Trump's presidential campaign from March to August 2016 when he was asked to resign by Trump for 2014 lobbying work for Ukraine's pro-Russia ruling party.
Yeah, not a good look. And this story came out from AP.
Yeah, this is Associated Press. This is legit. This isn't Jeffrey Bezos and the Washington Post stirring up more
crazy
nonsense. This is legit.
Yeah, one would assume that U.S. counterintelligence is not learning this by just clicking on the AP story.
I'm feeling they might be.
I don't know. I think it's pretty clear given the revelations. I mean, why you have FBI Director James Comey feels that it is necessary to conduct this investigation.
Manafort came up a lot during the hearing.
Of course.
But whether or not Manafort was a subject of an investigation did not come up during the hearing on Monday.
But Comey keeps talking about having a full counterintelligence and criminal investigation into the ties between Trump and the campaign and Russia.
Yeah.
So now you have something that went from bad to worse.
So I encourage anybody to go and find the original Associated Press report on this. It came out late this morning. This is a big deal because this is the first evidence of a direct tie between the Trump campaign and Vladimir Putin and the Russians. But these are extremely deep ties. Mm-hmm. And you know, the question of why Russia might have wanted to influence the election came down to a couple of possibilities. Number one, Donald Trump was still infuriated at Hillary Clinton for the coup in Ukraine, which is widely believed to have been a State Department operation. Number two, the Russians thought they really had something to gain by getting Donald Trump into the White House. We've already had Michael Flynn get shown the door for talking to the Russian ambassador and lying to the vice president about it. He apparently was working as a foreign agent for Turkey as well. Now we have Paul Manafort, who, interestingly, did not run this particular business through his firm. He ran it through a second company that is not as well tracked. And he also did not register as a foreign agent, which is against the law, even though he was lobbying on behalf of Ukrainian and Russian interests from 2006 to 2009, and then again in 2014.
Mm-hmm. And that's actually an offense that can carry up to 5 years in prison. But exactly just like you put out, talking about these ties combined with Russian intervention, it's a critical investigation that needs to happen.
Yeah.
And I mean, without other things, investigators have no doubt they've been interested in what Trump is doing. You know, a candidate that has been documented as having fondness of Putin, and some people say he has an obsession with him. But that combined with what you were just saying about Michael Flynn, that it's not by accident or coincidence. It's not a sufficient explanation.
There are a number of people involved in the Trump campaign who have ties to Russia, it turns out. And one of the interesting things that the AP brings up is that this their reporting directly contradicts the Trump campaign's assertion that no one had any deep ties to Russia. Again, you can parse this in a lot of ways. The broader question here in looking at what Manafort is doing, because Manafort's talking about propaganda, and Manafort is talking about investing in political candidates to deliver certain outcomes. These are things that corporations do all the time.
Well, that's where you start getting into this almost muddy water, because we're not talking about a president that has been elected, Trump, who is not a businessman, is just a political background. You have somebody that, yes, is a businessman globally, not just here in the United States. And many of these people, Michael Flynn, when we had talked about, you know, if that was an actual story, it is not, it is common for that to happen, for many of these businessmen to have ties to a country like Russia, where it is a huge financial hub.
Well, ultimately, what it comes down to is Deripaska sitting there saying, how do we sell more aluminum? I want to sell aluminum in the West. How do I sell more aluminum? And this guy comes in and he's like, well, if you do these things, you can sell a lot more aluminum. Mm-hmm. But the other side of it is, if you know what's happening in Russia and you pay close attention to what's going on over there, there are stories that Vladimir Putin is collecting money from a lot of different sources. And that the money that he collects is funneled through a couple of individuals to be set aside for his eventually retirement and exile. Because Vladimir Putin is not going to step down and then go live somewhere in the Russian countryside. Vladimir Putin may well be chased out of the country and have to go live on an island somewhere where he can't be found. So these oligarchs are a big part of his long-term retirement
plan. He understands the bigger picture.
And at the same time, he takes care of the oligarchs and makes sure that the business gets funneled to them. Mm-hmm. More money goes back to Putin, and this is how the whole thing works.
I feel like, though, since, you know, the early 70s, when it was a common practice, basically, in the political world to compare things like this to Watergate.
Right.
And now once you add up, you know, just going by everything that you said, it almost mirrors in comparison to have the setup of something like that.
But now here's the interesting thing about it, because we hear, you know, ties to the Russians and Vladimir Putin and all of this. And everybody starts thinking it's this cloak and dagger espionage stuff, and the Russians are gonna take over the United States, and they're trying to destroy democracy, all the rest of that. What I'm reading in the Associated Press report is businessmen trying to open up new markets. And that may be the extent of the relationship between people in the Trump organization, Vladimir Putin, and the Russians. Russian intelligence, therefore, is trying to manipulate our election, not to destroy the American way of life, but to open up markets. And as more power is vested in corporate entity, which is what's been happening in this country over the course, not just in this country, but globally, really since the 1950s, this is the sort of thing that you're going to see.
But think about it. I mean, of course you are going to have Russia wanting to support President Trump campaign and hoping that he gets into power, understanding that he is going to surround himself with people that he knows and trusts. And so be it. It's people that he knows from business that have had these connections with multiple countries, specifically Russia being one. So absolutely, Russia is going to be in a stance, in a position where they are going to back Trump.
If I look at it strictly,
over Hillary Clinton.
If I look at it strictly through an economic lens, if I look at it solely as a businessman, what's happening in the United States and Russia, from a business perspective, there are people in the United States and there are people in Russia saying, look, we're getting eaten alive by China. You have an economy. We have an economy. We have hundreds of millions of people let's start doing business with each other. The obstacle to that is 70 years of post-World War II hostility.
Mm-hmm.
And the general attitude among the American people, or if not the American people as a whole, at least certain forces in Washington who can influence the American people, who constantly tell us that Russia is bad, Russia is evil, Russia is out to destroy us. This is all we hear over and over and over again. And on some level, this goes back, and I'm really, really going down the rabbit hole here. On some level, this goes back to the alliance between the United States and the European Union and Japan, certain other Asian countries, that would decide who would be the winners and losers in the global economy. Russia was one of the losers. There is a reason why Russia was part of the BRICS bloc.
But essentially, they did it to themselves during that era.
Which included Brazil, India, China. These aren't countries that Russia is far more advanced than any of those countries. Mm-hmm. Far more advanced. India may be close.
But they set themselves up for that course to get that position and be essentially annexed,
you know,
by the global markets.
Half a century of animosity toward
some
the world.
Do have
yeah half a century of animosity to the world's leading economy is going to carry some consequences.
Of course,
but if we're still holding on to these ideas that the Russians are out to destroy us, we really need to let them go. I've been saying this for a long time. The most dangerous idea that anyone in America can have is that Russia is our enemy and Russia is seeking to harm us, because that fuels mistrust and paranoia, and there's already plenty of that on the Russian side.
Again, you said it before, you know, there's two countries in the world that have the power to destroy the world, us being one and Russia being the other, talking about nuclear bombs.
And in that case, we darn well ought to cooperate with each other.
Yes.
We don't need to agree. We just need to cooperate.
Now, do you think, because there has been such this message as being driven, especially by mainstream media, Russia bad, hate Russia, Russia is the enemy, that there is even more of a focus on this by Washington, by James Comey, anybody in the counterintelligence agency?
Well, this emerged from the Democrats.
Because I'm not going to downplay it and say that there aren't some valid, clear issues that we have going on here. And unfortunately, I think Donald Trump put the wrong people around him.
No, I think he put the people that I think in Donald Trump's eyes, he put exactly the right people around him, because he's looking, I think Donald Trump is looking to open Russia as a market in the same way that Richard Nixon opened China as a market.
No, of course,
and the way that you do that is you surround yourself with people who have dealings with Russia, who understand the way business operates over there, and who know the players.
So do you think then it is a situation where he didn't know as much, or how deep these connections did go, where it would seem to, maybe on the outside, look like casual business operations, but underneath we have something going on?
Yeah, well, I think it's amateur hour for Donald Trump, because he doesn't have that political background that says, wait a minute, this guy's got a 30-year relationship with the Russians.
Yes.
What are you doing? We don't do that.
And of course, you can't be naive and say you don't dot all your I's and cross your T's when figuring out who you're going to have in your center circle.
But this is where the Trump administration completely blows the messaging. Because instead of reacting to everything the Democrats are throwing out there, and the Democrats have been throwing this out there ever since WikiLeaks derailed the Clinton campaign, and again, I don't care where WikiLeaks got the information from, they didn't tell any of those people to write those emails. Those people that were working on the Clinton campaign and for the Democratic National Committee, they're bad people. They were bad people doing bad things to harm Bernie Sanders and to influence the outcome of the United States election. But I guess it takes one to know one in that case.
But especially coming from Democrats, they don't want to hear that.
No,
Bernie Sanders supporters don't say, because they are so anti-Trump that they automatically think, well, anybody that, you know, discloses information, WikiLeaks is bad because they're connected with Russia.
And
they're working together. Well, no, exactly like you just pointed out. Russia did not transcribe and write these emails, and somehow they made it seem like they were coming from the DNC.
The Bernie folks are as anti-Trump as you're going to get.
Of course.
I mean, that's ideologically opposed to each other. But a lot of what has come out about this makes it sound like there's all this cloak and dagger stuff going on, that there's some sort of spy game being played here to rob Hillary Clinton of the presidency.
Mm-hmm.
That increasingly, and I've been watching this, the more reporting that we get about this, the less that looks like the case. The more it looks like we have a lot of lobbyists with very particular interests in doing business with Russia in the circle of the Trump campaign and in the sphere of influence around Donald Trump. Mm-hmm. I believe Donald Trump has done that by design. And as I said, I think
you don't get the success that you have by playing it fair all the time.
I think way back in November, December, I brought this up for the first time, which is China is the enemy. Okay? China is the problem. China is destabilizing and disrupting the global economy. And the two countries that have the most to lose are Russia and the United States. Neither one of them wants to see China emerge as the number one. Neither one of them individually can stop China from becoming the number one economy in the world. So the only way that you do it is to work together and create something bigger.
So then, in fact, do you think that Donald Trump is smarter and the people in his circle know?
I think Donald...
Because that is not the message that you're getting from mainstream media.
And no.
As so many times, we need to find scandal. This is what we're looking for. We want scandal. We want to know that he is an illegitimate president.
Right. Well,
so this is what they're looking for.
This is certain elements of the mainstream media that are in the bag for the Democrats.
Of course.
Which happens to be a lot of them, by the way.
That has been the agenda
starting
that
with
has been
everyone at CNN.
For so long.
Yeah.
But you have to say... Maybe they get it. Maybe they understand that.
I don't think so because they're not clever people.
No, I'm not talking about people in the media. I'm talking about President Trump. No. Derek, I'm not giving them that much credit.
No, I think...
I'm talking about, you know, the insiders in Washington and President Trump. Understanding that, yes, China is the enemy and that you need some sort of agreement with Russia that you're going to work together, but there's so much surrounding it that makes you say, oh, looks bad.
It does look bad because what you have is a bunch of people who have either been working with or for the Russian government hanging around with Donald Trump. Now he's put them in there because they know what they're doing with no consideration at all for the optics of it. And this is where his lack of skill as a politician comes into play. Because, number one, he comes into office thinking, I can just control the media cycle the way I always have, which is not true.
Mm-hmm.
Because what you say is now not part of a 24-hour, oh, Donald said this, move on to the next thing. Now it causes congressional investigations. And number two, there are a lot of people who are just automatically going to assume that there's something nefarious happening here. Even if it's just a cabal of business people who are trying to get better relations with Russia.
And any small thing is going to be magnified.
Yeah.
I mean, this is sadly the news cycle that we live in.
Well, that's the narrative. Mm-hmm. You know, the narrative is Russia helped Donald Trump win the election. Why did they do that? Mm-hmm. Are we going to be ruled by Vladimir Putin?
Oh, no, absolutely.
Putin?
The tagline is already written. They just need to find the plot in what happened.
Yeah.
It's like, the story.
Vladimir Putin doesn't want to rule us. His buddy Deripaska wants to sell more aluminum and more helicopters. That's what it is. They want to sell more tanks.
They like the money.
Yeah. They want more caviar and Stolichnaya flowing to the United States. In world news, four people were killed near Westminster Abbey in London today in a suspected terrorist attack. At 2:40 in the afternoon, the attacker, identified only as a Middle Eastern man in his 40s, drove his car into crowds of pedestrians on Westminster Bridge, killing one woman and injuring 40. The attacker then tried to ram his car through the fence surrounding Westminster Abbey. When he failed, he jumped out of the car, ran through a gate, and stabbed a police officer, who later died of his injuries. Police shot and killed the attacker. Parliament, which meets at Westminster Abbey, was placed in lockdown, and Prime Minister Theresa May, who was in the building at the time, was taken to a secure location.
I mean, if anybody was watching any of the listeners were watching the coverage of this, and I was watching it unfold, and it was really confusing what was going on. And what I understood, there was something happening within Parliament, but then we realized, and may I say, this is the one-year anniversary of the attack in Brussels.
Yes.
We find out the timeline of what actually happened. Same as the incident that happened in Nice, France, that a car was able, or a truck was able, to knock down pedestrians. We're talking about one of the busiest walkways in London.
Yep.
That innocent bystanders were walking and got knocked down. It was, some eyewitnesses were talking about, it was just blood and broken bones everywhere. Then next step, you get to the railing of people near the gate, which again crashes into it. He somehow makes it onto the grounds, where then tries to go on this killing spree. It fits the narrative, once again, of these types of attacks that we've unfortunately had to talk about so many times, where again you don't know where it's happening, it is not a group of people, you don't know how it is going to happen, and the tactics are very different. It isn't somebody walking in with a bomb strapped on their chest or a gun.
Correct.
We're talking about using a vehicle as a dangerous weapon that in fact is killing people.
This is about as low tech as you get. All you need is an SUV and a knife. Mm-hmm. Or a couple of knives, which is all that this guy had. And the willingness to die for your cause.
Look at what happened in Connecticut over the summer, where somebody tried to plow through one of the parades.
Yeah. You can't really stop an attack like this. And you can't really prevent an attack like this. Mm-hmm. Because one of these folks can wake up in the morning and snap and decide, I'm going to go kill a bunch of people. So this is the reality that we have to live with. And trust me, it's not just going to be ISIS sympathizers or whoever it is carrying out these kinds of attacks in the future. It's going to be all sorts of disgruntled people doing it. So welcome to the 21st century. At the same time, this attack comes at a very, very bad time for European politics. Because even though we just had the vote last week where they rejected populism and, mm-hmm. and they rejected what was essentially a very anti-Islamic platform in the Netherlands, we still have an election coming up in France, and Marine Le Pen benefits every time something like this happens, because coupled with the terrorist attacks that have taken place in France, this amps up anti-immigrant sentimentality.
It was a few weeks ago when we were talking about it, and you said, if there is an attack between now and April, you said those words, between now and April,
it's good
it
for
is
Le Pen.
Already written in Le Pen will win.
Yeah.
Because when you have, and this is the reality, millions of refugees coming from these countries, coming from Syria, and unfortunately, ISIS sympathizers, radical Islamists are entering through that way. So whether you've entered through Germany, Belgium, France, England, they're everywhere, and we don't know where anymore.
The interesting thing about this attack is it was carried, apparently it was deliberately carried out against the seat of government, mm-hmm. which we haven't seen. It happened in Ottawa a couple of years back, but we haven't really seen that. Now, Washington, D.C., obviously you're not getting away with anything like this because there is security everywhere.
Mm-hmm. Was that the attack on the stairs?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that guy actually got into the House of Parliament before he was gunned down by security guards up in Ottawa. Mm-hmm. That's sort of a higher level, more direct attack than somebody walking into an airport or somebody walking into a bar or somebody walking into a sports stadium.
Where it doesn't matter who the victims are.
Correct. One is a target of opportunity where you know it's a soft target and people are going to be there and you're going to have an opportunity to do a lot of damage. The other is an attack directly against government forces with the idea of shutting down the government. Mm-hmm. Nobody's claimed responsibility for this. ISIS put out a statement saying we applaud the terrorism because that's what they do. But as far as we know at this point in time, this guy is a lone wolf.
Mm-hmm. But again, it's a combination. It's not just a soul attack. It's not like he took his vehicle, rammed it into the wall, and somehow made it in onto the grounds of the British Parliament, we're talking about, had the idea to take down multiple victims on his way there, almost in a complete rampage, but with the end game of finishing there.
Yeah. Possibly because he knew he wasn't going to get into the Parliament building, or possibly because he was trying to create a distraction that would give him an opportunity to get into the Parliament building. Operationally, you could think of a bunch of different reasons why somebody would want to approach it this way.
Now, again, I say how unfortunate it is that we have to cover stories like this and talk about...
By the way, just to go back to the Le Pen angle for a second, a group of vacationing French high school students... Or were among those, there were two French teenagers who were seriously injured in this mm-hmm. attack. So, yes, this immediately blows back into Paris.
Mm-hmm. It, you know, is unfortunate that we do talk about this, but it is the reality. And I've said it, and you've said it so many times, where things like this can happen here on our soil in the United States. And when I hear, and it infuriates me so much, when I hear such backlash about, no, it is not a Muslim ban. Because if it was a Muslim ban, then it would be including more countries. When our government, when our president is trying to get a grasp on understanding who is coming into our country, because we've had the head of Homeland Security put his hands up and speak in front of Congress, honestly and openly, and say, I have no idea.
Yeah.
We can't understand or know how many people are actually here. When our president is trying to do this and something like that happens, and I say it so many times, does it have to happen here again in the United States for somebody to wake up and be like, you know what, maybe it is time for us to pull back just a little bit?
The French security forces have said they're overwhelmed by the number of people in the country. The Belgian security forces have said they're overwhelmed by the number of people in the country. The UK security forces have said they have difficulty. They haven't flat out said they're overwhelmed, but they've said they're having difficulty tracking everybody who's in the country. This is the problem. You've got hundreds of thousands, tens of thousands of immigrants, and not all of these people are terrorists, but they provide cover for those who are. And it makes it easier to get people in, and people are talking to each other, and networks are developing, and people from different parts of the world who had been involved in jihad somewhere mm-hmm. are coming into Europe from other countries, hooking up with each other and saying, hey, let's plan some chaos. And then you have the people who get self-radicalized. It is an overwhelming responsibility for any security force to deal with. And the idea that you are going to have the unfettered free flow of people while you try and protect citizens from homicidal ideologues fails. Those are
it's impossible.
Those are incompatible realities.
Mm-hmm. And nobody wants to grasp the reality of that, the times that we live in, and it is wartime.
Yeah. It's unfortunate.
And unfortunately, things need to... may come as an inconvenience for a short period of time. But this is what we're dealing with. There's things that we are trying to put into place, like the 90-day ban. With so much backlash from it, I just want to say to the defenders of it, does this not show you what's happening?
You run up against this American idea that we don't need to stop what we're doing to fix this. And the truth is, yeah, sometimes you do. Sometimes you do. But nobody's going to admit that. Everybody's too proud to admit that. So Donald Trump comes out and he's, let's stop the flow from these countries. And everybody starts screaming, no, you're banning the Muslims. It's not banning the Muslims. We've explained why that's going on. I'm not explaining it because the fake Syrian passports are out there.
Yeah.
The bad people have them.
And they're here.
Yeah.
Well, today in sports news, we learned number 12 has been found. Tom Brady's stolen jersey from this year's Super Bowl has been recovered after being found in the possession of a member of international media, according to the NFL. The league announced Monday that the New England Patriots quarterback game-worn jersey in Super Bowl 51 and another jersey missing from Super Bowl 49 was retrieved after an investigation led by FBI. The jerseys were found in Mexico and currently are being authenticated. Yeah.
Authenticated, really authenticated.
Yeah, I sometimes mess up. By authorities, Houston Police Chief Art Achebe said, the Mexican editorial organization, a major newspaper publishing company, has identified the man allegedly involved in the case as Martin Mauricio Ortega, who was a director of one of the newspapers, Diario La Prensa, until he resigned last Tuesday. Yeah. OEM announced in a statement Monday that he accepted Ortega's resignation, citing his previous mentions of health issues, and said it was no previous knowledge of his alleged involvement within the case.
Health issues.
Yeah. A Denver Broncos helmet believed to belong to star rusher Von Miller from Super Bowl 50 also was recovered with two Brady jerseys, according to ESPN.
This guy is the Dr. No of sports memorabilia. That's what he's like, the Dr. No of sports memorabilia. He's got like all of the rarest pieces of sports memorabilia, probably in his island bunker.
Now, I didn't even know the other jersey was missing.
Nobody did. We didn't know Von Miller's helmet was missing. Mm-hmm. This guy, apparently, he had a reporter pinching this stuff for him. So somebody who had access, you know, somebody who was in the locker room, obviously, after the games, is going in there and grabbing stuff and bringing it back to this guy.
Now, did you see the footage of who they believed was the person that actually got it?
No.
And it was really quick. It was in and out. It was somebody clearly that had a press pass and was allowed to be in the locker rooms.
Yeah.
But, yeah, this is crazy.
I'd imagine he was paying a very handsome finder's fee for this stuff, too.
Mm-hmm. In Mexico.
Yeah.
Of course.
Hey, you know, he's a Tom Brady fan. Who doesn't like TB12?
And the helmet.
Yeah.
Well, today in food news, some countries are saying, where's the beef? Some of the biggest consumers of Brazilian meat have suspended imports over allegations that companies have been selling unsafe produce for years. China has banned red meat imports from Brazil, while the European Union said it would stop buying from companies implicated in the scandal. The crisis was triggered by a huge federal police operation on Friday. It found that evidence of meat packers have been selling rotten and tainted produce for several years. The meat industry plays an important part in the Brazilian economy, with exports worth more than $12 billion a year. The Brazilian government has done all it could to avoid a total and partial ban on meat imports from other countries. President Michel Temer, who's newly in president, shady businesses. Temer has held emergency meetings during the weekend and even invited foreign diplomats to a steakhouse on Sunday evening to reassure them. Quote, the Brazilian government reiterates its confidence in the quality of its national product that has won over consumers and obtained the approval from most rigorous markets, end quote. China, the EU, South Korea, and Chile have now announced restrictions on Brazilian meat products. Together, they accounted for nearly one-third of Brazilian meat exports in 2016.
So Bloomberg today, in their coverage of this story, noted that yesterday, Brazil's meat exports were down by 99.9%. That the country had shipped around $74,000 worth of meat, when on a typical day, they ship $63 million mm-hmm. worth of meat. This is massive.
Mm-hmm.
Massive. Now, before you freak out and decide you're not having any more hamburgers, we get no meat from Brazil in this country.
It's all here.
All the meat that we get comes from the United States, Canada, and Mexico. We get nothing from Brazil. Europe gets a lot from Brazil. China gets a lot from Brazil. A lot of different countries around parts of a couple of South American countries get meat from Brazil.
Mm-hmm.
We don't really, if anybody's selling Brazilian meat in this country, I don't know who it is or why. It's like that's if you're going to this meat fell off the van store, they're probably selling the Brazilian meat.
When I first read this, though, I mean, this is not shocking that you have corruption within
Brazil.
In Brazil.
Well, outrageous.
Yeah. Slipped my mind. Who is the former president that just got knocked out? What was her
Dilma
name?
Dilma Rousseff.
Dilma Rousseff. So, Temer, he came into power after Rousseff was knocked out because of more allegations with different questionable behaviors with politicians and a single company that was doing construction for the infrastructure within Brazil. Now we find out that there are issues of racketeering, money laundering, and so on, and bribery, which are involved in the meatpacking industry. Not shocking.
Yeah, no, not shocking at all. And as soon as you hear Brazil, mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, Brazil, of course. Of course there's corruption.
But
of course
you just
people
listed the
off.
Numbers talking about
99.9%
down.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And we're talking about a perishable good here. So if this stuff ain't shipped, it's basically getting chucked in the ocean.
And unfortunately, it doesn't trickle down so much the corruption into the farmers. They're just going about their days and handing it over. It's the middleman that we're having a problem.
The meat packers
and the end.
The meat packers are the ones that are going to get nailed on this.
So not only do you have now an economy that is going to suffer, you have these farmers that can't get rid of their meat because nothing is going exporting out of the country.
The good thing if you're on the supply side is you can always delay harvesting the animals. Mm-hmm. So if you can sit it out and hope that this all blows over in a couple of weeks, you're good. But the meat packers, they've bought the animals before the meat is packed. They are the ones that are losing the business. They are the ones that are losing the sales. They're the ones that are losing the money. If you cut 99.9% of an industry's revenue, that industry's gone.
It's pretty much nothing.
So what you may wind up with is the complete collapse of the Brazilian meat business. Mm-hmm. And you got farmers sitting around with all these cows going, we can't do anything with these anymore. And that's where it trickles down.
No, but you say that the farmers aren't going to be affected as much, but essentially they're not moving any product.
Right. Either that or the state has to move in and take over the industry. Mm-hmm. This is a huge story with huge ramifications for the global food chain. The global food supply, because if that meat isn't coming out of Brazil, it's got to come from somewhere. And the thing about meat is it's a commodity, and the thing about commodity buyers is they love high prices. So if Chicago Mercantile thinks they can make more money selling their pork bellies to China than they can in the United States, guess where all the U.S. pork is going? Mm-hmm. On a boat to China, and then the cost of your bacon is going back up through the roof. By the way, we've got a little bird flu problem with the poultry in Tennessee again.
Oh.
Which has been, So.
See, that's why I got to stick with the bacon and pork.
We actually saw consumer prices, in particular grocery prices, drop in the fourth quarter of 2016. You don't count on that continuing to be the trend, particularly if this situation in Brazil goes on for a while. Now, what was happening was the meat packers were bribing inspectors to let bad meat go through. In some cases, it was rotten meat. In some cases, it was meat from diseased animals. Mm-hmm. In some cases, it was meat that had been stuffed with cardboard to make the burgers look big. Cardboard.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because, I mean, if you know anything about cutting meat, there is a certain time that you cannot save certain cuts. So if it's after 10 months old, the cow, you have to remove a part of the head, which those are some of the most expensive and prized cuts around the T-bone and whatnot. So this is what they're doing. They're saying, you know, even if it's past its prime and past its time, which leads to mad cow disease. And this is why here in the United States, it is under strict, strict regulation.
Yep.
And what you can sell, not only from the farmers, but the butcher standpoint and meat packing standpoint, there is a lot of scrutiny here in the United States. In Brazil, all you have to do, you know, give a little money and more meat is being shipped out.
There you go. Oh, the meat smells bad. Throw some ammonia on it. Boom. Mm-hmm. Problem solved. Yeah. Not good, but that's potentially a huge, huge story with global ramifications. Want to keep an eye on. In technology news, Google is under fire in Europe and losing advertisers after ads appeared on websites and YouTube videos associated with hate speech. Google head of Europe, the Middle East, and Africa apologized at the Advertising Week Europe conference in London on Monday, saying, quote, "I take the issue very seriously and I apologize in the instances where that may have happened." End quote. Here in the United States, Google is under fire after advertisers that had boycotted Breitbart News saw their ads on the site's pages, though Google said these were served with third-party forum provider Discus. In the United Kingdom, the government, Marks & Spencer, and The Guardian are among advertisers who have suspended their Google campaigns due to ad placements.
Mm-hmm. Here in the United States, Verizon and AT&T being two of them.
Now, I don't know how much of this is people upset because their ads appeared on PewDiePie videos. Because we all know that PewDiePie is under fire for
maybe saying anti-Semitic.
Making a parody video where you gotta pay a couple guys in India $5 to dance around with a sign that said, kill all the Jews. Mm-hmm. Which he thinks is hilarious, which actually is not hilarious. It's childish and immature. But the Breitbart thing is something else entirely. I'm in this industry, okay? When you buy advertising online, sometimes you know where it's going, sometimes you don't. One of the things in Google AdWords, which is the platform that we use to buy the advertising, is that some websites are anonymized. There are some that say exactly what you're getting. It's like you're getting mycokerewards.org or you're getting about.com. There are others that just say financial site or lifestyle site.
And you Which look, could be, you know, anything.
And if you look at the number of impressions and you know who's who in the top 100 web hierarchy, you can kind of figure it out. You can look at it and be like, oh, that's CNN. Oh, that's Forbes. Mm-hmm. And one of the reasons that they do this is because those organizations, WebMD is a great example of this. WebMD has its own internal sales department and its own sales program. But they sell all of their leftover ad space to the Google network. Otherwise, you're not running anything. So if you got 100 ad impressions left over at the end of the month, sell them to the Google ad network, and then at least you're getting something from them. The reason they keep it anonymous is so that clever advertisers won't go in and be like, I don't like WebMD's rates, I'll just buy from Google. Having tried to do this, I can tell you it doesn't work. Even if you know that's WebMD.
But unfortunately, you don't know with Google where it's going to end up.
Right. So because of these anonymous sites in the back end, agencies like the one that I work for has no idea where this stuff is going. And we can sit down and we can say to a client, we're not going to put your ads on these sites. But at the end of the day, if you're buying an anonymous advertiser and all of this stuff is controlled by algorithms and programming, we don't know. The Breitbart boycott is ridiculous and a waste of everybody's time. And everybody who's doing that is a bad marketer.
So essentially from an advertising and marketing standpoint, it becomes a difficult job. But not only for them or you doing your job, but also from the company that is trying to advertise.
Right. And it's not, it's not like people are buying ads on Stormfront. Okay. Stormfront, you can't buy ads on Stormfront through Google. I don't think you can buy ads on Stormfront at all. When it comes to your ads showing up on Breitbart, again, it's a bad marketing choice, okay? Believe it or not, you have customers, whatever business that you're in, Coca-Cola, yeah, you probably got some white supremacists buying your product, okay? You probably got some conservatives buying your product. Embrace that. Mm-hmm. Smart marketers, smart businesses want to make money anywhere they can, okay? Not supplying people who are filled with hate, but Breitbart is not necessarily filled with hate. This is more of this needless boycott nonsense that is crushing the American economy at a time when it can ill afford it. Different story in Europe, where you have individuals and political organizations that are actively involved in promoting extreme left-wing and extreme right-wing, kill all the immigrants, ban all the Muslims, kill all the Jews positions.
But also with the European Union, they have a much stricter stance on those kinds of, using those kinds of words on platforms like social
media.
Depends
on where you go. Germany does, other countries, not England. So much. You know, France, yes and no. England, you can get away with a lot as long as you don't mention anybody by name.
And you think it's that much different than here in the United States?
We have more freedom in general in the United States. You could go online and say anything you want about anything. And,
of course.
And really,
and people do.
Outside the court of public opinion, you're not going to get too much hassle for it. You will get more hassle over in Europe, but understand that the people who are running hate-centric sites grew up with those rules and understand how to get around those rules. They know what they can say and how to say it so that they stay on the right side of the law, but the wrong side of human decency.
Of course.
And these are the kinds of websites that Marks and Spencer and The Guardian and Verizon do not want to be a part of.
Mm-hmm. Well, this is why you're seeing so many companies pulling out.
Correct. Because
and really, the list is continuing. I mean, it's growing.
Really, what nobody wants is to have somebody put up a screenshot on Twitter or a screenshot on CNN of an article that says, this is why we should drive all the Jews out of Europe, mm-hmm. and your Marks and Spencer ad is running in the side
right
column.
On the side.
Because then
how
everybody's
would you
like,
feel
oh.
as a company paying millions of dollars to have your advertising and it's... Yeah.
Marks and Spencer, sponsoring hate since 1941. You know, it's like, no, they're not. You know, they're, I don't know if they are or not, but they don't want to be associated with it.
Well, especially in a time where political issues, because not only just passed here in the United States on an election, but all in the European Union, you have these big, big elections that are happening.
Yeah.
So topics like immigration, illegals, abortion, these things are coming up. And of course, yeah, you don't want your advertisement next to some hot button topics.
No, and it, but it does mean that if you're running one of those websites, boy, is there advertising money to be made, and everybody is looking to make it. The one place where you can't make it, WMFO Medford. Advertising free since 1941.
No why, there's no sun up in the sky. Stormy weather.
Spring.
Is it though?
Spring.
You sure?
Just keep repeating that over and over again. Spring. And maybe someday it actually will be, but that day ain't coming in the next five, kids. Here's what we got. Lows in the teens tonight if you're downtown. Single digits out in the burbs. Hope you like eight. Eight. That's your low tonight. Eight.
Yeah, I told you those numbers were banned from the show.
Eight. Spring started on Monday. Eight. Tomorrow, sunshine. It's going to look like spring. It's going to feel like January. High in the mid-30s, lows in the mid-20s tomorrow night. Friday, it's going to warm up. Big warm up, mid-40s.
Oh, I thought you were going to tell me teens. That's hopeful.
Mid-40s with rain all afternoon, lows in the 40s on Friday night. Saturday, more rain, might get up to 50. And then lows around freezing on Saturday night. So if you're in one of those places that gets cold, watch out for ice. Sunday, still more rain, maybe some snow in the morning. Maybe some snow Sunday morning. Highs on Sunday in the upper 30s. Lows right around freezing. And then Monday, rain. High in the low 40s. Lows in the mid 30s. So yeah, snow.
Yeah.
Snow, ice.
Eight.
Spring. Happy spring, everybody. When we come back here on WMFO Medford, did you hear all of the other stories that caught our attention this week?
Wholesomeness, quality, convenience, value for your dollar. These are just a few things to consider when you're buying beef for your freezer. Basically, you have three choices. You can buy beef as a side or a quarter. You can buy wholesale cuts, or you can choose retail cuts. And deciding which to buy, you should consider the amount of beef you can store in your freezer, the amount your family can use in a reasonable time, and the kinds of meat your family enjoys.
And whether or not it was made in Brazil.
For example, it's probably best to buy